around Jacksonville can be tough for anyone, but what if you're disabled? Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen to us there anytime. You can stream us live on Facebook as well, right now where we're streaming live. Just ahead, why disabled residents in Jacksonville are filing lawsuits and speaking out over their problems navigating the city. What are your thoughts about getting around Jacksonville and how tough it can be, particularly if you're disabled? Give us a call at 549-2937. Then later, it's a new way to get in touch with nature. We'll tell you about Hip Camp. That's in today's Going Green. Plus, don't miss it as actress Morgan Fairchild joins the show. We'll hear all about her star turn at the Alhambra Theater and her amazing career in show business. That should be a really special treat, all of that ahead. But first this hour, imagine being stranded without a ride to the doctor or arriving hours late to medical appointments that your life literally depends on. These are Florida patients' most common grievances with a company that the state pays to arrange medical transportation for people with disabilities. Now, the company LogistiCare coordinates subcontracted transportation services, everything from taxis to ambulances, all depending on the patient's needs. And its disabled users say it's stranding passengers after dark or making them constantly late to vital medical appointments. At the same time, JTA has been hit with a lawsuit from two local women, one who is blind and one who is hearing impaired. They say the authority is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 by failing to make proper accommodations for disabled riders. Getting around Jacksonville can be hard enough sometimes, even for the abled, given our large landmass and well-documented gaps in public transportation. But for the disabled, the picture is even more complicated, as we're learning. We begin the hour with a closer look at all this as we welcome Tyler Morris, Executive Director of the Independent Living Resource Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
Board Member Sharon Hoffmeyer with us as well. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
And WJCT reporter Ryan Bank, who's been looking into this.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about how difficult it can be to get around Duval County, particularly if you don't have a vehicle and particularly if you're disabled? We want your calls. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. Ryan, let's begin with you. You've broken this story about big problems with a company based in Georgia called LogistiCare, but it provides transportation services to people here in Jacksonville. What did you find?
So basically, this is a very large company. It's one of the biggest transportation brokers in the country. They're by far not the only transportation broker. Essentially, what they do is it's pretty much in the name, LogistiCare. They provide logistics. So they subcontract with drivers from taxicab companies. Even in some states, they're rolling out programs of partnering with Lyft. And they provide about 65 million rides a year, according to their own numbers. About 6 million of those in Florida alone annually. We had a tip from a Jacksonville woman by the name of Catherine Grace, who says that not only is she habitually late for appointments, but that in one particular instance, she was left in a shopping center where her dentist office was until in the wee hours of the morning before she could find someone else with a truck big enough to take her wheelchair. So I filed public records requests with the Agency for Healthcare Administration for the complaints filed directly with the agency regarding LogistiCare, and that returned 345 results. Now, the majority of them were late pickups and strandings, but some of them were about simple rudeness of drivers and even upwards of physical assault. Now, to be clear, we don't know exactly how many of the complaints have been verified. There's an investigative process in the agency and in the company specifically. And of course, the quoted cost of the judgments and all of the correspondence between the agency and the company and the patients it was quoted somewhere around $4,000. So we know that these are the initial complaints filed and that they were only filed with the agency. We don't know how many complaints were actually filed with LogistiCare. And all that to say, LogistiCare's response is that with all of the rides they provide, these complaints represent a very tiny percentage, and the verified complaints even smaller, about 0.5%, according to a company representative.
It's 549-2937 to join us. A tiny percentage, says LogistiCare. They declined our invitation to appear on this program. So did JTA. Tyler Morris of the Independent Living Resource Center. A couple of women around town have sued JTA, saying that they're not getting decent access to public transportation. Tell us a little bit about, from where you sit, as someone who runs a nonprofit trying to help the disabled live independent lives, what are some of the challenges people are facing?
Each year that we have a survey that goes out to the consumers who we serve, people with disabilities around the area. And I think that probably around the state of Florida, you're going to find the top three issues are transportation, housing, and employment. And when we sent out our last survey, almost 20%, about 16% of the responses that we saw would like to have a deeper education or a better understanding on transportation. Transportation is vital to us. It gets us to and from. We might have the luxury of being able-bodied and hopping into a car, but this is sometimes a full-day commitment for some of these riders. And
you don't stop and think about it if you've never had the experience of how challenging it can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to take a second and think what the time requirement is for a ride, and Sharon might be able to talk about that, but it's important. I mean, we've seen at the Independent Living Resource Center that the transportation from even young riders and getting comfortable with public transport is very important. We've done a travel training with some of our youth with disabilities just so they are comfortable with it and know how to access public transportation, because that's going to get them to work. That's going to get them to school. And if you're not comfortable with that, then the likelihood of them using it, drops.
Lawsuits are being filed and complaints are mounting against a private company as disabled residents in Duval County say they simply cannot access public transportation, even when they've paid for the service. We want your calls on this. Let us know your thoughts about the state of public transit, especially if you have a disability. 549-2937. So Sharon Hoffmeyer, you're on the board of the Independent Living Resource Center. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with this as someone who's in a wheelchair? And what are some of the difficulties that you faced?
Well, one of the difficulties is, as Tyler mentioned, the ride windows. They're very constrained because in order for me to get here today, I had to be up at 6 o'clock, and I left my house at 7:30 to be here at 8:45.
And did you go on the JTA Connection bus?
I did.
Yeah, so you caught the bus, but you it's not as widely available in terms of access and stops on the route and things like that.
Right, it's a shared ride system, so we don't know where we're going, basically, until we get there. So we could do a couple stops in between. We can drop off a few people and then get to our destination. Most of the time, where there's difficulty in getting there, we're late oftentimes.
That's the biggest issue, being late to appointments?
Right, and especially for people that are using the service to go to work, because they are being dropped off late and they're being penalized by their employer for being late, and it's out of their control.
Has that happened to you?
It's happened to me more than once.
Yeah, pretty frustrating. Now, Ryan, JTA declined our invitation to appear on this program, but they did issue a statement to another media outlet, Action News, over a lawsuit that's been filed by two other local women over these issues. saying, you know, JTA's Connection Paratransit Service strives to deliver the best possible service for people with disabilities. Connection Service is not a medical transport, and operators aren't trained to deliver related care. They call the lawsuit without merit. And to be clear, nobody here on the program this morning is filing a lawsuit. We're just discussing these issues more broadly. But when you listen to Sharon talk about the problems she's had, it sounds similar to what you learned in terms of patients that are trying to get transportation through this Georgia company, Logisticare. As you reported, it provides this type of transit all over Florida.
Right. I believe it's every county, and I think it's 39 states and the District of Columbia. So it's basically nationwide. They have a $20 million contract with Florida. It was recently renewed until 2019. They've had some issues in other states as well. There is a pretty high-profile lawsuit that was recently filed in California, along the same lines of some of the complaints that are being received about the company here in Florida. Now, as I've talked to many people in the community about this specific company, the issue that keeps coming up is that, you know, a lot of people don't even really know what options are available to them, or that their own public transit systems should be providing the same type of services. Now, here's another specific thing that should be mentioned, and that is that companies like Logisticare that contract with Medicaid or Medicare or Medicaid managed care plans or other HMOs, those companies are required to take you to your doctor's appointments, to your dentist appointments, eye appointments, and to pick up your prescriptions. They aren't a service to take you to the supermarket or to go shopping, mm-hmm. or anything like that. Now, that is, however, something that's supposed to be provided by your public transit system. That is general transportation. So that's a major difference there as well. Again, Logisticare is only one of many companies, and some of the other larger companies like MTM Transportation has also seen similar complaints and problems around the country. And again, JTA is not the only public transit company that has also had some difficulties around the country. So this seems to be a very widespread issue.
Sure, and lots of calls on this. As we talk about how difficult it can be for the disabled in Duval County just to get around. What do you think about this? 549-2937. Sonia in San Marco is with us. Hey, Sonia, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, I was a former rider of COMSIS when it was COMSIS, and then it was JTA Connection, and now I believe it's First Ride or Logisticare. And I had numerous problems. I was in a car accident with an unlicensed driver. I had a driver come to my apartment when I was living in my apartment, unannounced or uninvited. He actually showed up at my door asking me out.
Wow.
And what I'm seeing is that we're still having some problems. I was constantly late to school, late to work. And I see that the same problems are happening all over again when they thought they fixed the issue, when they changed the JTA connection. So my problem is, or my question is, how are these problems going to be addressed? You know, what is stopping them from actually solving the issues?
Thanks, Sonia. JTA, for its part, Tyler Morris, maintains it's in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it calls these recent lawsuits frivolous. What about that? And what about Sonia's perspective?
If we can back up a minute just to talk about, for some of those listeners that don't understand how the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, impacts this transportation and makes it a requirement. The Americans with Disabilities Act is basically a civil rights law that protects people with disabilities from discrimination. And that can be from anything from public accommodations, communications, transportation. And in the transportation arena, you have to think of a functional equivalent to what we would have as individuals that might access the fixed route system. So if you think about the fixed route system in a circle that goes around and around, for simplicity's sake, how do you actually access that? And if you have barriers because of either your disability or geographic location or whatever it may be, elderly, and that service is available. To answer, I think that there definitely needs to be more of these conversations on you know, qualifying or not qualifying, but quantifying these issues and bringing them for discussion.
Jake is in Jacksonville. Hi, Jake. Good morning.
Hi, it's me.
Hey, go ahead, Jake.
Hey, I have two children, twins that have autism, and they're nonverbal. And I was just wondering, do services like this provide for disabled individuals who are nonverbal and maybe don't have, you know, would need someone to assist them in getting to their destination? Because they don't understand, like, the dangers of traffic, and they would kind of need someone to be there as a guide of sorts.
Sure.
And I just know that I'm not going to be around forever, and one day, you know, I'm going to depend on programs like this to ensure their safety, and I'll go ahead and take care of that.
Yeah, absolutely, Jake, and I know as a parent that's got to give you so much worry. Sharon Hoffmeyer, what about that? I mean, there are different types of issues related to disabilities or that involve, for example, autism spectrum disorders. What about Jake's comment?
More than likely, those children would qualify to ride paratransit. There is an eligibility process, but they could potentially qualify for that service. But the driver's responsibility is door-to-door service. So if they needed to get, say, to school, they would walk them through the front door of the school, and then someone else would have to pick it up from there.
I see. So when we talk about this concept of paratransit, it is a shared ride service that, as Sharon said, that provides door-to-door non-emergency transportation for customers with disabilities who, for whatever reason, they can't use the regular bus service. Is that a good way to define this?
I think that would be a good example. And like I said, it's one example of the many protections for people with disabilities for a functional equivalent for something. You know, you also have to take in consideration when you get to that doctor's appointment, if you have to take paratransit and you are deaf or hard of hearing, you know, what is the accommodation that your doctor is required to provide for effective communication? And that's a sign language interpreter. You know, it's very easy for those that aren't impacted with disabilities either in their personal lives or themselves. You have to think about those accommodations that are necessary. There was a groundswell of individuals who fought very hard for these civil rights, and to the point of throwing themselves out of their wheelchairs to climb the steps of Congress. You know,
to get the Americans with Disabilities Act passed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's important to keep this advocacy going.
Here's a tweet from Shauna pointing out we need to try to put ourselves in others' shoes. She tweets the show, city planners should be required to navigate their projects in a manual wheelchair and or blindfolded to test them out. Lots of calls
That's
on
quite
this.
Quite the proposal.
Lots of calls on this, 549-2937. Mark is in Mandarin. Hi, Mark. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Melissa. As a nurse working in healthcare for 24 years and helping patients schedule JHA connections or COMSIS back in the day, there is a culture, at least in where I work, that if a patient does not get to that van soon or ASAP, that the driver will leave. And I don't know, I believe that culture still continues with that belief system. I am very concerned about the time window of pickup for persons with disabilities. It seems to be extremely cumbersome, and it is when they're needing to go to life-saving dialysis appointments and things like this, those appointments are scheduled one patient after the other because of the lack of resources here. And to have a patient arrive late, 30 minutes or an hour or even beyond late, is truly a problem, that this spreads from the bus to the patient to the van to the dialysis clinic and then getting them home. And numerous times in another industry I work with, dialysis centers would call at 5 o'clock and say, we need you to come pick up this patient. Well, who brought them? Well, JTA Connections. Well, why haven't they come? They're not here. We need to close our doors. And my question is, what is a reasonable accommodation? And is JTA really doing their job to be reasonable? And should that reasonable accommodation also trickle over to the doctor's appointment, to the dialysis center?
Okay.
I'll take my answer.
Thanks, Mark. And his comment references JTA. However, and as I pointed out, for those just tuning in, JTA has issued a statement calling lawsuits against them without merit. They declined. We did not hear back from them in our invitation to appear on this program. Ryan, the comments he made were about JTA. Your reporting was more based around this private transportation company, LogistiCare, but some of the same issues.
Well, as I said, the issues are not, in one company or in one public transportation service. They are around the country. They're not just in Florida. They're in many counties in Florida and across the country. And so this seems to be an issue of much larger proportions, and I know that Sharon can probably speak more on that.
Sharon, let me ask you, do you think it has to do with that these programs maybe aren't funded to the level they need to be to provide the transportation that's more timely and more convenient?
I think that the funding is there. I think the problem is JTA subcontracts the rides to MV. They're in their third year of 5-year contract. And basically, they always have what I call excuses. So they'll say, well, traffic, the weather, drivers didn't show up for work. But none of those issues is our problem. It's their problem. They need to figure it out. They need to hire more people. Part of the problem with the drivers is they don't pay them enough. They are very underpaid, and they're providing a customer service. They are providing, in many cases, life-sustaining medical transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And the city of Jacksonville actually did an audit report on MV, and they found that MV, while the numbers were small, they did manipulate the numbers to cover up the late drops where people didn't make it to the appointments, the late pickups, and they've eliminated customer service complaints. And all of that was detailed in the city auditor's report.
And when was that released?
Approximately a month and a half ago.
Okay. Let's take a call now from Brittany in Mandarin. Go ahead, Brittany.
Hey. So I just had a comment on the actual call centers. I think that so much of the problem comes from the actual call center. I think they need a lot of retraining. I am a life coach for people with disabilities, and so often there is zero patience. They'll transfer you. They'll hang up on you. Just yesterday, I ended up riding along with a girl, and they just don't put your route in correctly to the driver. So I think, to me, we have to get back to the basics and completely retrain the call centers and just get that kind of squared away.
Okay, thanks for that.
That's just my comment.
Tyler, are some of these issues related to just being more aware, more sensitive?
That's one of the ongoing things. Advocacy is important, not only for that, for the protections of civil rights laws, but also to end stigmas and to educate our public on disability. it's a very important thing that, you know, is integral wherever we are, in our workplace, in our school systems, in our daily life. That disability exposure is really important. And one of the things that we do at the Independent Living Resource Center is provide free disability sensitivity trainings to businesses to help them to understand best practices, to understand disability. A lot of people face disability and see it as kind of, oh, I don't know how to handle this. And, you know, what do I do? Just being a good human. And you know, if you don't know, ask. And that the advocacy is a big portion of what we do at our agency.
We've received an updated statement from JTA just now. I'm going to read it in full. JTA's Connection Paratransit Service strives to deliver the best possible service for people with disabilities who are functionally unable to use our regular, accessible, fixed-route bus service for some or all of their transportation needs, and for people who are transportation disadvantage. The Connection service is a door-to-door service 7 days a week, not a medical transport, 1,300 trips per day, and a fleet of 99 vehicles. Collisions and customer concerns are trending downward. JTA, and I'm paraphrasing just a bit, but reading most of this in full, JTA's paratransit contractor is responsible for reservation, scheduling, dispatch, and management. And paratransit service also offers travel training to ADA paratransit eligible individuals. JTA follows the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 eligibility standards for paratransit service. The statement from JTA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to correct something too. Apparently this was sent to me very in the afternoon, about 3 p.m., a little bit before 3 p.m. yesterday. Did not see that email. However, This has been sort of the state similar statement to what JTA has issued in the past, and basically in reference to the auditor's report, they examined 528,000 paratransit trips MV provided between October 2014 and March 2016. In a period of 18 different days, the auditors found 389 of 447 changes MV employees made to the pickup times make it appear as if rides were provided within 15 minutes of their scheduled times. And JTA, of course, is saying that's a very, very small percentage, and that it's very minuscule. And this is straight from the auditor's report in July.
It's a small percentage of riders, to be sure. But Sharon Hoffmeyer, for someone in your position, that doesn't cut it when you're seeking the transit you're hoping to enjoy. So as a board member of the Independent Living Resource Center, where do you think this issue goes from here, given that some women in town, not you, others, have filed suit and the auditor's report is out on this?
Well, I think that the community has to get more involved. The disability community needs to come forward and join the different advocacy groups, such as the Mayor's Disability Council and the JTA Advisory Committee, and let our voices be heard in that matter.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your perspectives this morning, and thanks to JTA for sending that statement to us on this. We'll continue to follow it. Tyler Morris, Sharon Hoffmeyer of the Independent Living Resource Center, and our own reporter Ryan Bank, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead later. Don't miss it as actress Morgan Fairchild steps into Studio 5. A special treat there. But up next, Going Green on the show looks at a new way to find places to camp. Back in a moment.
Thank you. Next time on 1A, how safe are our ships? An air sea rescue is underway to recover the bodies of 10 missing U.S. sailors, feared dead after a guided missile destroyer collided with an oil tanker in Asian waters. It's the fourth time a U.S. warship has been involved in an accident at sea in this region this year. The state of the Navy, next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
On the next Jazz Night in America, I sit down with Herbie Hancock to talk gizmos, synthesizers, and doo-wop.
You know, I used to stand on the corner with some of the other kids in the hood, you know. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, you know.
Woo. And we've got highlights from his concert at Celebrate Brooklyn. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Want to learn more about nutrition and weight loss? Join WJZT and Baptist Health for Girls Day Out Saturday, August 26th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Spend the day with experts that will engage you to be a better you. Enjoy breakfast, lunch, session, gift bag, and so much more. Tickets are just $40. Log on to WJZT.org/Girls Day Out and get your tickets today.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Mark Pitkavage, a senior researcher at the Anti-Defamation League, about America's militia movement, what they stand for, how they've evolved since the election of Donald Trump, and why some showed up bearing arms and wearing camouflage at Charlottesville. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's called NDD, or Nature Deficit Disorder. Too many Americans, especially kids, don't spend enough time outside. And sometimes, even if you want to find a way to connect with nature, you can't. Campsites on public land around town often book up months in advance. Well, a new startup is trying to change that. It's called HipCamp. It's a way to unlock access to nature preserves, farms, and ranches, giving you a totally new way to go camping. Alyssa Ravazio is the CEO of HipCamp, and she's on the line in today's Going Green. Alyssa, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us about HipCamp. This is a website that has millions of users. How does it work?
So HipCamp unlocks access to private land. We work with landowners ranging from ranchers, farmers, nonprofits, people taking care of, you know, big nature preserves, and create entirely new places for people to camp. It's free for a host to sign up. If they own land and they want to host campers, they can go to hipcamp.com and create a listing, and then it's free for campers to search as well. The host, you know, chooses their own price, and we basically just serve as a matchmaker and connect the two.
So it's almost like Airbnb, but for camping, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to put it. You know, our whole company is all about getting people into nature, and that's really our mission, to get more people outside. So that makes them pretty different, but the business model is definitely quite similar.
And you've recently expanded to Jacksonville, so you're putting on the website opportunities for people to book some R&R in really interesting places. Often these are private campsites, farms, ranches, tiny houses. I mean, how do you find these unique locations?
Yeah, I mean, increasingly they're finding us, which is super exciting. But we definitely do a lot of research and kind of scour the internet for, you know, who might be the right type of person to host really one of these camping experiences, nature retreats, and to be honest, the bounty of beautiful nature in Florida has been really exciting to us, and we're really excited to be live in Florida.
Now, I just looked on hipcamp.com and searched Jacksonville, Florida, And there are a ton of sites on here. Some of them are obvious, like Anastasia State Park. Some of them are not. Stuff I'd never heard of. These are some kind of off-the-beaten-path spots that people can access through HipCamp. How does the process work? How do you use the website? How do you navigate it?
Sure. So if you're on HipCamp.com as a camper, somebody looking to, you know, get into nature, you can put in your dates. You can choose a certain price range. You can put in filters. Some of our most popular filters are, you know, can I bring my dog or shower in there? Is there swimming? Is there hiking? Is there surfing? And then HipCamp will show you a list of all the camping in that area that matches the criteria you've selected. So we do feature all the public land as well, which is what you're seeing. And then increasingly, we're unlocking access to these unique and often really private places to camp. So these are places you could not go a year ago that were closed to the public. And now you can go find, you know, a beautiful tiny home all by yourself on the edge of the Keys, or a gorgeous spot that, you know, really is going to be just yours and your family for the entire weekend. So really, it's a unique experience.
And it's an experience more and more Americans are pursuing with the growth of your site. You're really seeing a demand for this. People really miss just being out in the woods, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that when you look at what's happening in America and how just increasingly prevalent technology is becoming, I think the drive to get into nature is a really powerful antidote to a lot of the downsides of being always on and always connected. It's a really powerful movement that I think we're just seeing the first beginnings of.
And HipCamp is free, correct?
Yeah, so it's free to sign up and host campers on your land. We also offer a full insurance liability policy to cover you from any risk there. So it's totally free to sign up as a host. You get to set your own price. And then HipCamp just takes a simple commission on any booking we send you away. So totally free to sign up and join and, you know, earn some extra revenue off your beautiful nature.
It's hipcamp.com, now available and showing sites around the First Coast. Alyssa Ravazio, CEO at HipCamp, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
A quick break, and in a moment, actress Morgan Fairchild steps into Studio 5.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Max Brooks, the guy who wrote World War Z, has a new book out. It's based on a video game.
Every single challenge in the game on survival level essentially teaches you life, patience, planning, you name it, Minecraft has it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll talk Minecraft and a whole bunch more next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Earlier this year, the architect of Donald Trump's campaign said,
"There are no white supremacists, my friend."
And after Charlottesville, many people say Trump gave white supremacists a pass.
"We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides."
How we got to Charlottesville on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sit back, relax, and travel back in time with 89.9 on Sunday nights beginning at 7 with Radio Theater.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Doo-wop Revival.
Good evening, I'm Glenn Fisher, the king of the doo-woppers.
Relax Radio. Throwback Sunday, Sunday nights beginning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Online at WJCT.org. Looking forward to looking back.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues, as part of WJCT's After Hours, tonight at 11 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world, your music.
It's easy to listen to WJCT, even when you're not near a radio. Just visit WJCTnews.org from your phone or tablet. On our mobile site, you're just one click away from a 24-hour live stream of our programming. And you'll also have easy access to all of the top local news stories. Listen live on WJCT's mobile website, WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, she is a showbiz icon. Actress Morgan Fairchild has been performing since the 70s and has appeared in more than 150 movies and television shows. Everything from Dallas to Roseanne to Friends. Yes, remember, she was Chandler's mom on Friends. Even an Emmy-nominated performance on Murphy Brown. Fairchild made her Alhambra Theater debut in Jacksonville back in 1973 when she played opposite Artie Johnson in The Seven-Year Itch. Now she's back more than 40 years later and starring on stage as Lexi in the new production of Dixie Swim Club. It's a special treat as Morgan Fairchild joins us in the studio. So good to meet you. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to meet you.
I'm a longtime fan. It's exciting to get to meet people up close and personal like this. Welcome to Jacksonville.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back after all this time.
That's right. I didn't realize you had been in an Alhambra production in the 70s. So
I did four in the 70s.
Four.
I did four in 73. I had just gotten divorced and, you know, was sort of trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And I went ahead and changed my name legally.
Really?
To Morgan Fairchild. So this was the first town that I'd actually worked as Morgan Fairchild in. Because I was just damned if I was going to spend the rest of my life putting his name in lights. You know?
Weren't you born Patsy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But then you adopted, and what a great stage name that is. It's unforgettable.
Thank you.
I mean, so it's a return to Alhambra, and you play Lexi in Dixie Swim Club. What's the show all about?
You know, it's really fun. It's about five women who were on the swim team together in college and became close friends, and they get together every year at the same cottage in the Outer Banks and just catch up and try not to lose touch with each other, and they're very different types, and I think everybody in the audience will say, oh, I went to school with that one, or oh, that's my sister. You know? they're very different types, but you see them kind of grow over the years and mellow somewhat, and just everything that they kind of go through and how they keep their friendship together. And it's very funny. You know, it's interesting because a lot of the guys will come up and say, you know, well, I came because my wife wanted to see this chick show, but I laughed more than she did.
Oh, that's awesome. It's 549-2937 to connect with showbiz icon Morgan Fairchild. And, you know, I don't even know where to begin. I've enjoyed you in so many movies and television shows. I mean, you were on Dallas. You played Jenna Wade on Dallas.
Yeah.
That is burned into my brain. And what was it like working with Larry Hagman on Dallas? That must have been just a real kick.
Well, it was. You know, Larry and I were the only two native Texans on the
That's
show.
That's right.
And so all these people who will remain unnamed were doing bad Southern accents. And, you know, so the producer would say, you know, go over and talk to Morgan or Larry there. They'll give you the real Texas accent. So people would come over with their script and hold it up and say, will you say my lines back to me in Texan so I can understand
it? Oh, how funny.
So you'd try to do the line reading for them. But, you know, the show wasn't really written for Larry to come off the star. I mean, he and I had a couple of scenes where we were really chewing the scenery together.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, is it right to say that when you played Sandra Bernhardt's girlfriend on Roseanne, that was the first lesbian relationship on network TV? I think it was.
Maybe. I can't remember what year Ellen did her show where she came out.
I thought you came first.
It may have. That's what interested in me. You know, they called and offered it to me, this story arc, and I thought, you know, this would be interesting because especially the first episode, it's this whole buildup of Sandra's new girlfriend. And I knew the last person anyone in the world was going to expect to see when she opened the door was Morgan Fairchild. So I thought it was very funny, you know. And I think it was – I like to do things that are groundbreaking, that are iconoclastic, that, you know, are on the cutting edge of things. And so whenever I'm offered a chance to get in there and do something creative, I try to do it.
And you keep doing it. You know, a whole new generation loved you when you played Chandler Bing's mother on Friends. Mm-hmm. No one expected you to be there when the door opened, and there you were, so beautiful. And then immediately, I think people said, well, of course that's what Chandler's mom would look like. You know?
Well, when they offered that one, you know, the show was not a big hit yet when they'd offered that to me. And a lot of my friends were saying, oh, you don't want to do that. You're too young to play that guy's mother and all this. But I had seen the show, and I thought the kids were really good individually, and the and the ensemble work was really good. It's kind of two different talents. And so I thought the show had such potential. God, was I right? And so so I said yes. And then, you know, I got on there and Matthew Perry says to me, oh, you won't remember me, but my dad played the sheriff on Flamingo Road and Falcon Crest. And I used to come over on Flamingo Road and visit you when I was nine. And I'm like,
my God.
Guess I am old enough to be this kid's mother.
That's hilarious. Now, you're so beautiful. You're so talented. People don't realize about you, unless they follow you on Twitter, that you're also quite brilliant.
Well, thank you. You can stay all day, honey.
You're a foreign policy expert. You know more about foreign policy, it's true, than some of the actual foreign policy wonks running the government. I think that's been noted. You're very well informed. You were an early AIDS activist. You even have given testimony about the disease. You were one of the earliest celebrities to sort of come out and get out in front of that issue back in the 80s.
Well, see, I'm a science nerd, and I wanted to be a doctor, a paleontologist when I was a kid, so I always kept my hand in and read a lot. So I'd been following this new virus since 80, 81, when it didn't even have a name. It was just 11 cases of Kaposi sarcoma in New York and then 12 cases of pneumocystis pneumonia in California. Mm-hmm. And I'm following this and thinking, this is odd. And then it came out that it was all in gay men. And then you knew something new was out there. So I tried to warn all my gay friends for a long time. Mm-hmm. But then when Rock Hudson got sick, I had been Rock's date to his AFI, like, Lifetime Achievement Dinner. The year before, and, you know, he'd look great. He was on Dynasty, and I'd heard that he wasn't looking so good, so I knew immediately what it was. And anyway, everybody told me I would lose work if I tackled something this controversial. Everybody told me it's too hot. You know, there was such fear mentality. It's hard for people to remember now, especially young people who weren't around at the time, the great fear and stigma at the time, how scary it was.
Yeah.
But I knew I was the only famous face they had that could get out and go on Nightline and explain what a retrovirus is and how it works and how you do and don't get it. And when people were scared of doctors and, you know, were scared of regular people, I knew that I, as a sex symbol, could go out and talk about sex in a way that was different than some, you know, clinical analysis of it. So I felt a moral obligation to do that. I opened the first AIDS veterans wing with Mayor Koch in New York. I was there for the unveiling of the first quilt, testified before Congress to get AIDS funding. You know, just joined at the hip at Tony Fauci from NIH and Surgeon General Koop at the time, just trying to disseminate knowledge and get rid of the stigma.
You were as knowledgeable talking about this as C. Everett Koop, the Surgeon General. He was your friend, too, right?
He was my buddy. Yeah, he was my buddy. And for all the people who only knew him, he died recently, but for all the people who only knew him as the old bearded guy that's, you know, on the I've fallen and I can't get up thing.
Right.
I mean, the gay community owes that man their lives a lot because he was appointed by a conservative president because he was anti-abortion. But nobody really considered that when an epidemic hit that he would step up as a real doctor and fight the system and go against some of the conservative dogma of the time and actually take action on it. Yeah. And I knew that he wanted to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, and I knew that he knew when he took this stand, he would never get that job. And he took the stand anyway. And I just can't say enough wonderful things about him and what he did to step up on the AIDS crisis.
Sure. And as you said, you lost some acting jobs, I'm sure, in the short term. But in the long term, what a career. Do you still love acting?
Yeah, I love. You know, I've been doing it since I was 10.
Yeah.
I've been around a long time. Started in the theater when I was 10 and doing commercials even back in Dallas and Runaway Production in Dallas, all kinds of different movies and things. You know, my first movie I worked on was Bonnie and Clyde in 66. And so, you know, that's where I got the bug for movies. I just love
it. Who did you play in Bonnie and Clyde?
I was Faye's double. Which is different than a stand-in. You know, it's like I was getting ready to go open a Funny Thing Happened Away to the Forum, and a gentleman who owned all the sound stages where we did the commercials and a lot of stuff called me and said, hey, you want to be in a movie? And I said, well, sure. And he says, well, I'll be at the North Park Inn at 5 a.m. And I said,
get out of here.
I'm opening a show tonight. I don't know if I can be there at 5 a.m. And he says, well, you have to be if you're going to be in the movie. All right. I didn't know the name of it. I didn't know anything. And just as we're getting off the phone, he says, oh, can you drive stick shift? And I said, Oh, sure. You know. So I got to the theater and I said to the guy, "Say, you got to take me
teach
back
me
and
how.
At intermission, can we go in the alley? You teach me how to drive stick shift." So, you know, so I had no idea. So I get out there and it's all these old cars, you know, to drive stick shift. And but we're I got there at 5 a.m. in this parking lot at the North Park Inn. They put us all on a bus. I don't know who anybody is. I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're doing. They take us out to the middle of nowhere, Texas, which in Texas, as I can say, for being from Texas, is middle of nowhere. And, you know, we get off the bus. It's still pitch black. I don't know what to do. I'm a kid. I've never been on a movie set. So
How old were you?
16.
Wow.
So I said, what do I do? And somebody said, well, why don't you go look at the set? And I said, where's the set? And they said, it's down that road. You know, it's a dirt road. So I start down this road kind of in the dark. The sun is just barely coming up. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm looking for the set. They said, there's an old house down there. And I'm looking and looking, and I don't see any old house. And so finally, you know, sun's coming up, and this guy is kind of walking toward me, kind of head down with his hands in his pocket, sort of shuffling along, coming toward me, and the sun coming up behind him. And I said, excuse me, sir, is this the way to the set? And he looked up at me and he said, why, yes, it is. Let me show you the way. It's Warren Beatty.
And I bet Warren Beatty really wanted to show you the way to the set, based on what we know about Warren Beatty.
Well, smart man.
Well, and you're a very smart woman, and it is just a pleasure to meet you. And I'm sure the show is amazing. You got to get your tickets now to Dixie Swim Club, starring the great Morgan Fairchild. She plays Lexi in the show, and it runs through September. Get your tickets now at alhambrajax.com. We could keep talking. Unfortunately, I have to end this program right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wish we could keep talking. It's so good to meet you, and I'm sure I could hear so many more amazing stories. Thanks
well,
so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And that is our show. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A is up next. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow with Jacksonville City Council President Anna Brochet, looking at the issue of removing Confederate monuments in the city. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.